Good afternoon, and thanks for being here. Thanks for coming out early for your opera experience. My name is Kip Crana. I'm called Dramaturg Emeritus now at San Francisco Opera. Dramaturg is like a fancy term for scholar in residence. I was on staff in what's called music administration for 40 years, and one of my duties was managing the commissioning of new operas, which included the commissioning of Dead Man Walking by Jake Hickey and Terrence McNally, which premiered on this stage 25 years ago, so hard to believe, this fall. What I'd like to do in the next 25 minutes or so is talk to you a little bit about the performance history of this piece and about how it came to be in the first place. I'll talk about the story of the opera, and we'll listen to some musical examples as we go along. And I'll talk about the cast and the production, and I think I should get going with all that right now. The opera tells the story of a real live person. She's here today. A Catholic nun named Sister Helen Prejean. She published her memoir, Dead Man Walking, in 1993. It's not a novel. It is a memoir about her work with death row inmates, and she talks about being a spiritual advisor to two death row inmates and witnessed their executions. She counseled them all the way to the end. And in the introduction to her book, she wrote this: "I've heard that there are two situations that make interesting stories. When an extraordinary person is plunged into the commonplace, and when an ordinary person gets involved in extraordinary events. I'm definitely an example of the latter. I stepped quite unsuspectingly from a protected middle-class environment into the most explosive and complex moral issue of our day, the question of capital punishment." Well, is an ordinary person a good subject for an opera? Probably not, but Sister Helen's estimation of herself is way too modest. She's 86 now. She's a woman of exceptional conviction and faith and courage. In the 1990s, she chaired what was called the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. And since the publication of her book, which is over 30 years ago now, she has ministered to other inmates on death row, and I think she has witnessed as many as 8 executions. She helped establish what's called the moratorium campaign to end executions. And on the other side of the issue, she founded the group Survive to help families of murder victims. The death penalty, is that a good subject for an opera? Well, probably not. Political issues aren't in themselves good things to sing about. But the personal human issues of forgiveness and love and retribution and redemption, those are things that opera thrives on. As the librettist Terrence McNally put it, I'll quote him, "While we can't improve on the original book or the film," he's talking about the 1995 film directed by Tim Robbins, "we feel we can bring something different to the story of Sister Helen Prejean and a condemned convict. This will not be an anti-death penalty tract. It's the story of a woman who makes a journey with this man, a journey that she doesn't know if she can make." So that's the essence of the story. It's about this personal voyage into the depths of the human soul, searching for that rare commodity called forgiveness. At the center of the conflict is the convicted murderer. We know he is guilty. We see the crime at the start of the opera. There's no question about his guilt. Joseph de Rocher is his name. He's a composite fictional character derived from the book. The thrust of the opera is not so much about keeping Joe alive as it is about preparing him for death. The origins of the opera go back to 1996 when our general director was Lotfi Mansouri. When he took over the company in 1989, he pulled me aside and said, "Kip, I want to commission an opera based on a libretto by Terrence McNally." He, of course, is a famous Broadway playwright and also a famous opera lover. You have all seen a show by Terrence McNally, if you have never heard his name. He unfortunately died in 2020. He was one of the very early victims of COVID. He died at the age of 81. But you have seen, I'm sure, one of these shows, The Ritz, Frankie and Johnny and the Clair de Lune, The Lisbon Traviata, Love, Valor, Compassion, Master Class, that's his most famous one about Maria Callas, Kiss of the Spider Woman, Ragtime, The Full Monty. Have I hit on something you've seen? I'm sure I have. So Lotfi's idea was to pair Terrence up with the young man who was working in our PR department at the time, Jake Hickey. He was beginning to make a name for himself writing art songs that were really being accepted by a lot of important singers. Frederica von Stade was one of the early advocates of his, and she actually agreed to be in the opera to sing the role of the prisoner's mother. the ranks of Jake's fans began to grow with luminaries like Renee Fleming, Dawn Upshaw, Sylvie McNair, Brian Asawa, Jennifer Larmour, Carol Van Ness. And the time was really ripe for Hege to write an opera, and Lotfi knew that. The choice of the subject for Lotfi boiled down to a comedy for the millennium. This was meant to be for the year 2000. But it seemed reasonable that Terence might choose something along the lines of opera, like his Tony Award-winning play, Masterclass. Or maybe a gay-related theme like Love, Valor, Compassion, or maybe a combination of both of those, like the Lisbon Traviata. But during a lunch at a San Francisco restaurant one sunny afternoon, McNally floated the idea of Dead Man Walking. And Hege reports that every hair on his body stood up. He said it was an immediate visceral reaction. The second reaction was even stronger. I heard music. So McNally later explained, I was determined to do an opera on a contemporary American theme. He did not like the historical subject that Lotfi had proposed. We wanted something topical and also a story that was well known enough that people wouldn't have to walk in cold. He was, of course, referring to that excellent 1995 film. Susan Sarandon won an Oscar playing Sister Helen, and Sean Penn was the prisoner. Securing the rights to the book came next, and that was not too difficult for me. The copyright to Helen's book is owned by the Sisters of St. Joseph of Medai, her order, and permission came pretty readily, since she was really eager to have her story reach a new audience in a new form. And she made no preconditions on the use of her story. She wrote, I'm very enthusiastic about my book becoming an opera. I trust Jake and Terence's integrity and their talent to transpose Dead Man Walking into a spiritual classic, a profound testimony to the search within all of us for redemption and unconditional love. Well, I think she was right to trust Jake and Terence. The Chronicle's critic back then in 2000 wrote about the opening night. It was a triumph beyond even what the most optimistic boosters could have predicted. And the critic for the Sydney's newspaper, The Australian, wrote, the reason for the work's appeal lies in its almost perfect fusion of ideas and emotions. Since that world premiere 25 years ago, Dead Man Walking has been seen in 80 productions in 13 countries on 5 continents, making it almost absolutely the most performed American opera of our century. Actually, it's been done now before twice in San Francisco. This is the third performance here because back in 2015, it was performed by Opera Parallel, which is a very fine local company that presents contemporary opera. The piece has been seen in Houston, Chicago, New York, both at City Opera and at the Met, Cincinnati, Austin, Detroit, Baltimore, Boulder, internationally in Dresden, Malmo, Sweden, Adelaide, Australia, Madrid, Vienna, etc. Even Tel Aviv. It's interesting that those European places, of course, do not have the death penalty, so the central political question is somewhat moot, but the human drama is very telling nonetheless. Let me describe the story for you briefly, and as we go along, we'll listen to some musical examples. The opera is not based on the film, but it does sort of proceed in a kind of a cinematic fashion with a series of numerous scenes that are linked by short musical interludes. There's an almost wordless brief prologue that depicts the terrible crime that is the springboard for the story. A teenage boy and girl, they're skinny dipping, and then they're making love. And we hear music from their car radio, first a blues song and a jazz tune. These are both Jake Hege's original compositions. And then their brutal murders transpire. And the two killers we clearly see include a man who we will soon meet as the death row inmate, Joseph DeRocher. There's a very sharp contrast in the next scene, which opens in kind of a mood of celebration. Sister Helen is teaching a hymn, a simple, sort of authentic sounding gospel hymn that's another Jake Hege creation. She's teaching this to the inner city children at Hope House in New Orleans, which is a school run by Sister Helen's order. This hymn will become a sort of a recurring reminder for us of Helen's search for the strength she needs in this arduous personal journey and test that she's going to face. These examples you're going to hear are from the 2000 original recast of this piece, featuring the San Francisco Opera Orchestra, conducted by Patrick Summers, who's conducting today. So this is Sister Helen's hymn, sung by Susan Graham, who originated the role of Sister Helen. This is example one. If you know your music theory, you know that that hymn is pentatonic, like many traditional hymns, like Go Tell It on the Mountain, or Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, or Amazing Grace, and so forth. There's a little blue note at the end that kind of goes out of that form. So Helen has been a pen pal to a convicted man on death row, and now he wants to meet her in person. And so during her long drive to Angola State Prison in Louisiana, she voices her misgivings about befriending a convicted killer, a man guilty of such a horrible act. And in her aria, she thinks out loud about this journey to my God, to my Jesus, to this man, to the truth. Once again, Susan Graham, example two. That motive will be heard quite often in the opera. This journey to the truth, and so forth. There's a little quintuplet figure at the very beginning, da da dee da da dee da dee da da dee da dee da da, which is recalling the crime. So Helen and the prisoner Joe have an awkward first meeting. He's stubborn. He refuses to admit his guilt, and this is something that, of course, Helen knows is false. And he tests Helen's tolerance by sort of insolently baiting her with his musing about the physical pleasures he has known with women. Just a really inappropriate thing to be talking about with a Catholic nun. It's called A Warm Night. This is John Packer, the original Joseph de Rochet, example three. Everything is going to be all right. The most extended solo scene in Act One is sung by the prisoner's mother, Mrs. de Rochet. This is a role originally created by Frederica von Stade. She gives sort of an artless, emotional appeal to the Pardon Commission. She says, "I just don't know what good my Joe's being dead will do." And then there's a haunting, beautiful sextet in the following scene, very contrapuntal with voices entering one after the other. The murder victim's parents express their pain as their thoughts dwell on the mundane last words they said to their children, not knowing that they would never see them again. fix your blouse, comb your hair, shut the door. The first act culminates in a scene that's drawn from an actual incident in which Helen caused a ruckus at the prison by fainting out of hunger and fatigue. This kind of branded her as a troublemaker with the resentful prison authorities. In the operatic version, Jake has this incident building up with music builds into a sort of a cacophony of conflicting voices, the prisoners, the school kids, the nuns, everyone chiming in, expressing this tumultuous emotional pressure that Helen is enduring. She's trying to get a Coke out of a Coke machine, and she faints. And that's the end of the act. In Act Two, we get a little relief from these pressures in a soaring, beautiful, poignant duet for Helen and her friend sister Rose. Rose urges Helen to look very deep into her own heart to see if she can find the strength to forgive Joe. The duet starts out, "Sometimes forgiveness is in the smallest gesture." This is Teresa Ham Smith as Sister Rose, Susan Graham as Helen. Example four. When Helen sees Joe again, it's on the night when they're passing time together waiting for his execution, and she manages to win his trust in a moment of sort of gallows humor that the librettist Terrence McNally came up with. She tells Joe about her childhood memories of seeing Elvis Presley in person in Las Vegas, and Joe calls her a rock and roll nun. This scene displays the personal warmth that Helen is able to show, and it opens an emotional door between them. She urges him to admit his guilt and seek forgiveness. He's not quite ready for that yet. Then Joe bids goodbye to his mother and his younger brothers. His distraught mother struggles mightily to put on a brave face. She sings, "Don't say a word, let me look at you. See, I'm smiling." This is Frederica von Stade, the original Mrs. de Rocher, example five. Flicka always makes me a little misty when I hear that. Helen's courage and persistence in their final scene together finally result in Joe's devastating confession of guilt. And it takes a heart-rending effort for her to accept the truth that he was indeed capable of such a horror. But she tries to open his heart to the possibility of God's redeeming love. And with that assurance, he goes to face his death with Helen at his side. The production you're seeing today is not that original production we did back here in 2000. but one created by the director Leonard Folia. He directed the other Jake Heggie operas that we have done here, Three Decembers, Moby Dick, and It's a Wonderful Life. The scenic design is by Michael McGarty, and this has been seen in numerous locations over the years, finally now arriving back home in San Francisco. As with all the Jake operas we have done, it is conducted by Patrick Summers, who conducted the world premiere. He is the longtime artistic and music director at Houston Grand Opera, and for many years he was our principal guest conductor here. Jamie Barton stars as Sister Helen Prejean. She's no stranger to our stage. She sang Fricka in The Ring, and she was Adalgisa in Norma and Jezzy Baba in Rusalka, and she has sung the role of Sister Helen in Atlanta. Ryan McKinney is Joseph DeRoche, the condemned prisoner. He was last seen here as Clarence in the world premiere of John Adams and Peter Sellers' Girls of the Golden West. He's performed the role of Joseph DeRoche at the Met and at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, and he's been working out in the gym. He's very buff, as you'll see in this production. Mezzo-soprano Susan Graham was the first Sister Helen, and she returns to the work now as the prisoner's mother, Mrs. DeRoche, that role created by Federica von Stada. She made her debut here in 1990, talking about Susan Graham now. She's been heard here in lots of roles, including the title role in Iphigenia en Tauride, Handel's Ariadante and Xerxes. She was Octavian in Rosencavalier, and she was Dido in Berlioz's The Trojans. She's won the San Francisco Opera Medal. She's really been a regular here. Brittany Renee is Sister Rose. She appeared in the company in Rhiannon Giddens and Michael Abel's Omar a little while ago. She was also Musetta in Puccini's La Bohème. And baritone Rod Guilfrey returns as Owen Hart. He is the father of the murdered girl, a very prominent part in this opera. He created the role of Stanley Kowalski in A Streetcar Named Desire back in 1998. More recently, he was Mr. Potter, the bad guy, in Jake Heggie and Gene Shear's It's a Wonderful Life, and he was the father-in-law in Kaija Saariaho's Innocence. San Francisco Opera is very proud to bring back this remarkable opera on the 25th anniversary of its debut on this stage. Back then, the librettist Terence McNally wrote, "The extraordinary character of Sister Helen Prejean will be at the center of our opera. If we have done our job well, we will have honored her life as well." And Sister Helen summed up the message of the opera pretty well, I think. She said, "I know the transcendent power of music will convey in a new way and to a new audience the lesson that my journey has taught me, that forgiveness is never easy, and that each day it must be prayed for and struggled for and won." I'm Kip Cranach. Thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here.